Let's turn to Daniel chapter 11. When you get to Daniel chapter 11, stick your finger right there and hold your Bible there, and then flip towards the front of the Bible and find Isaiah chapter 46. We know that God dwells outside of space and time. So he's not confined to the constraints of either. He can observe time in its entirety. One of the wonderful, awesome truths about God. And because he's able to do that, if you'll read with me in Isaiah chapter 46, verse 9, remember the former things of old, and this is God speaking here, for I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me. Verse 10, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. Best commentary on the Bible, God's word, it's the Bible. God declares this of himself, that the things that he speaks in advance of them happening are valid and real. And that's kind of exciting when we've been going through Daniel and seeing some of the things. And even tonight as we go through chapter 11, which kind of takes us from the time of the Medes and Persians up out into and heading into the millennial reign. It's pushing those limits on both extremes for us who are kind of in the middle, in the balance of this right now. But God's accuracy has been questioned often, therefore wondering the authenticity of the scriptures and the truth of God's word. But God says of himself, who is able to view things outside of space and time, it's nothing for him to see the whole of time. Isn't that interesting? Then it really does mean that he leads us and guides us, and he ordains the steps of the righteous. You know, those people whose hearts are for the Lord, he ordains our steps. He knows the directions in which he wants to lead us, and he directs and gives us guidance and direction. In verse 1 of chapter 11, as the angel is kind of declaring these things to Daniel, also in the first year of Darius the Mede, I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. And now I tell you the truth, behold, three more kings will arise in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than them all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Greece. Then a mighty king shall arise who shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he is arisen, his kingdom shall be broken up and divided toward the four winds of heaven, but not among his posterity, nor according to his dominion with which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be uprooted even for others besides these. And you remember, as we go through, and we kind of caught bits and pieces of this already studying in Daniel, but ultimately, we're kind of finding these groups of people and these world powers that were kind of overlapping and intersecting with the nation Israel, or somehow had an impact or a connection to. And out of the south, when we get into verse 5, there were the four out of Alexander the Great, really, who ended up coming up and out of the there were four rulers that kind of came out of that, out of Alexander the Great. And out of those four, we really start tracing and just tracking with these two world powers. The Egyptian powers out of the south, and out of the north, the Syrian powers. And that's kind of what we'll start seeing, just we start crossing over these two powers and how they interact through the years, and then get into ultimately the end times, which I believe we're heading into or in the midst of now. So also the king of the south shall become strong, as well as one of his princes, and he shall gain power over him and have dominion, and his dominion shall be a great dominion. At the end of some years they shall join forces, for the daughter of the king of the south shall go to the king of the north and make an agreement, but she shall not retain the power of her authority, and neither he nor his authority shall stand, but shall be given up with those who brought her, and with him who begot her, and with him who strengthened her in those times. So they, by marriage, tried to make this agreement between the north and the south, tried to make this agreement and to bond together. It didn't work. They ended up poisoning one another, and it was pretty bizarre and odd. But when people want to rule and have power, these are the things that happen. So by marriage, they tried to connect the two because one was they were constantly going against each other and warring with each other. But from the branch of her roots, one shall arise in his place, who shall come with an army, enter the fortress of the king of the north, and deal with them and prevail. And he shall also carry their gods captive to Egypt with their princes and their precious articles of silver and gold, and he shall continue more years than the king of the north. And also the king of the north shall come with the kingdom of the king of the south, but shall return to his own land. However, his son shall stir up strife and assemble a multitude of great forces, and one shall certainly come and overwhelm and pass through, and then he shall return to his fortress and stir up strife. Really, just the struggles that they have, irregardless of their desires to try and, even through their connivings and their marriages and different things, to try and work out these balances between the Egyptian powers and the Syrian powers. Still, ongoing strife goes on. In verse 11, and the king of the south shall be moved with rage and go out and fight with him. And the king of the north, who shall muster a great multitude, but with the multitude shall be given into the hand of his enemy. And when he is taken away with the multitude, his heart will be lifted up and will cast down tens of thousands, but he will not prevail. For the king of the north will return and muster a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come at the end of some years with a great army and much equipment. Antiochus the Great now steps in and ultimately starts to take over in this time period. In verse 14, now in those times, many shall rise up against the king of the south. Also violent men of your people shall exalt themselves in fulfillment of the vision, but they shall fall. So the king of the north shall come and build a siege mound and take fortified city, and the fortresses of the south shall not withstand him. Even his choice troops shall have no strength to resist. But he who comes against him shall do according to his own will, and no one shall stand against him, and he shall stand in the glorious land with destruction in his power. Antiochus the Great did have favor with the nation Israel. They had joined forces with him at times, and he had given them favor. And now in verse 17, he shall also set his face to enter the strength of his whole kingdom and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do, and he shall give him the daughter of women to destroy it, but shall not stand with him, but she shall not stand with him or be for him. And this is where Cleopatra is given over as the wife of the Pharaoh. the south and is given over, and she, he's thinking, hey, she's going to be able to side with me, and it doesn't. She ends up sticking with the kingdom there, and so it really kind of backfired. And after this, he shall turn his face to the coastlands and shall take many, but a ruler shall bring the reproach against them to an end, and with reproach removed he shall turn back on him. And then he shall turn his face toward the fortress of his own land, but he shall stumble and fall and not be found. There shall arise in his place one who imposes taxes on the glorious kingdom, but within a few days he shall be destroyed, but not in anger or in battle. And in his place shall arise a vile person to whom they will not give the honor of royalty, but shall come in peaceably and seize the kingdom by intrigue. Antiochus Epiphanes really comes now on the scene and is in the scripture viewed as a type or a type of the Antichrist. And as we read through this, this large portions of this evening, as we see his the way he lived, the way he handled himself, everything he did, you see as it starts to unfold. And then at the very end, we start to see the parallels in it between the Antichrist and this person, Antiochus Epiphanes. He's really bent against the things of God. And as let's read in verse 21. And in his place shall arise a vile person to whom they will not give honor or royalty, but he shall come in peaceably and seize the kingdom by intrigue, or kind of by a flattery, you know, flattering words and this kind of thing. And with the force of a flood, they shall sweep away from before him and be broken, and also the prince of the covenant. And this is the high priest of Israel. He had him killed and installed another. And after the league is made with him, he shall act deceitfully, and for he shall come up and become strong with a small number of people. He shall enter peaceably even into the richest places of the province, and shall do what his fathers have not done, nor his forefathers. He shall disperse among them the plunder, spoil, and riches, and he shall devise his plans against the strongholds, but only for a time. And we see that and you can see why he would be viewed as a type of the Antichrist, because of his manipulative and of power, his manipulation of power, and then his agenda behind all of this, you know, for personal conquest and gain, but is willing to plunder, and then he shares the plunder and kind of gets them to engage in it, yet is trying to get them to do what they would want to do. And that's ultimately, they want to be able to, have peace. As we see today, they want to have peace. He shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army, and the king of the south shall be stirred up to battle with a very great and mighty army, but he shall not stand, for they shall devise plans against him. Yes, those who eat of the portion of his delicacies shall destroy him. His army shall be swept away, and many shall fall down slain. Both these kings' hearts shall be bent on evil, and they shall speak lies at the same table, but it shall not prosper, for the end will still be at the appointed time. While returning to his land with great riches, his heart shall be moved against the holy covenant, and so he shall do damage and return to his own land. Obviously, just bent against the things of the Lord and against God. And at the appointed time, he shall return and go toward the south, but it shall not be like the former or the latter. For ships from Cyprus shall come against him. Therefore he shall be grieved and return in rage against the holy covenant and do damage. So he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the holy covenant. He butts heads up against Rome is really what this time frame is. He's butting heads up against Rome. As he turns and starts butting heads up against Rome, They're too much for him. He's angered by all this, knows he can't beat him. On his way, he leaves and turns back and goes against the nation Israel. And this is the time of like the Maccabees and stuff that maybe some of you are familiar with this from your Catholic background. Some of you might have read some of that. But it's a time period that, and this is where these guys, when they were, we talked about this before, when they, this is how the time of Hanukkah came about, when they finally gained victory over the temple and the festival or feast time of lights, festival of lights, when they would go and they lit the lampstand, and it only had enough oil for one day in it, but they lit it and it was going to take 7 days to process and make the more oil for the lampstand, and it burned the whole time for this. And so this is when they took on this big celebration time of lights, and it turns into ultimately Hanukkah. This is the time of the Maccabees. This is the time frame in which we're kind of reading through. When he came back, Antiochus Epiphanes came back and just started to just wreak havoc with the Jews. And some of the things that he did or caused them to do, as we read on, let's read on and see some of the things that he had them do. And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress, and they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place their abominations of desolation. And this is when they ended up having him sacrifice pigs, you know, swine on the altar, which is an absolute disaster to the Jews, and forced them to do this. And those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. And this is the Maccabees that ended up coming up against and doing wonderful things up against these powers that were forcing themselves on them. Isn't it interesting how the remnant remained throughout the time? And in the time of the end, that will be the case too. There will be the remnant of the nation Israel that will remain. And they will seek shelter in the rock city Petra during the very end. And this is the time that they realize what has really happened with the Antichrist, who, again, wants to come in peaceably and make these plans and do these things, but in the end, just destructive and disastrous. And those of the people who understand shall instruct many, yet for many days they shall fall by the sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. Now when they fall, they shall be aided with a little help, but many shall join with them by intrigue. And some of those of understanding shall fall to refine them, purify them, to make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time. Now it shifts gears at this end or this appointed time. Verses 36 through 39 is carried out to the last days, when the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak blasphemies. And this is speaking specifically of the Antichrist. Speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished, for what has been determined shall be done. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall exalt himself above them all. And you remember, this is the spirit of the Antichrist, no doubt. And just as we saw the enemy, Satan, in Isaiah, as he wanted to exalt himself above God, and referred to himself in this way, and said, and we have then the I wills of Satan, that he would exalt and be come as God. And we see this is the same heart of the Antichrist, or the same desire of the Antichrist. And we see it, as it's described here, ultimately extremely destructive. But in their place, he shall honor a god of fortresses and a god which his fathers did not know. He shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus he shall act against the strongest fortress with a foreign god, which he shall acknowledge and advance its glory. And he shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain. It is interesting that in these times in which we live now, the land is kind of, they're trying to decipher who has what. And they're dividing even the land as we speak, trying to figure out whose land it is. You know, if you look, we saw an interesting thing, it was almost a year ago now at the conference. One of the guys had done a study kind of that things are not as they appear was his whole point. And it was kind of a special, you know, like a, I don't know, a symposium, but it was a, it wasn't one of the main studies. It was just one that you could go to if you wanted to, one of those type of things. And so I just went and sat in on it and checked it out, and because I liked the guy that was doing it, so I figured I'd enjoy it. And if you look at the patch, or study the patch even on Yasser Arafat's, on their clothing, you know, their garb, you can't find, there's no spot. It's from the border to the coast. You can't find the nation Israel on their patch anywhere. In other words, they have a manifest, they have a plan, and they want to eradicate, they want to eliminate the nation Israel, and that's their agenda. No matter what they're saying, that's their agenda. And it was interesting to look, and he started showing all this stuff that was their own information or kind of their propaganda. And if you look closely, you can never, there's never, because they do not see the land in that way. They see it absent of the nation Israel. That's the way they want to see it, and that's their plan, and that's their destiny, and so that's how they're looking at it. And it's kind of fascinating to see such a, you know, we're, how trustworthy is the information we get? You know, I kind of question that. I'm sure you do too sometimes, through the media and stuff. How really trustworthy is the information that we get? How diluted or polluted is it? You know, the information that kind of disseminates down, especially regarding some of the foreign affairs like that. But that the land would be divided, and I think even now, as they would desire to have the land separated so that they could ultimately find peace. And I think the nation Israel, they'll state clearly they want peace. You know, but they don't want to give up any more ground in their view than they've already given up at all. And so you can kind of see some of these things as they fit in, even in a current time frame of wanting to separate the land and divide things up. How close are we, you know, when you see this kind of thing in that light? At the end, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots, horsemen. And I don't know that the chariots will be quite like they are now, or like they would be referred to here. Maybe more of the tanks and all that stuff. And with many ships, and shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. Isn't it wild that now, I mean, if you watch some of the information they've got about the new some of the bombs and equipment and everything, it's kind of fascinating the type of stuff they've got now. It's just overwhelming what can be done through in warfare now. Just whoosh, sweep through and just overwhelm, you know, because of the power and the force that things can be done now. And pass through in the verse 41, he shall also enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon, or this area of Jordan. Interesting, somehow Jordan is just kind of protected from this, you know, rage, you know, as the Antichrist goes through and tries to take over. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over the precious things of Egypt. Also, the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him. Possibly the areas of like China, Pakistan, India. It's going to be a concern. He's going to turn from what he's doing and going to turn back and start to go back and attack. Therefore, he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. He shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, and he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. Ultimately, hitting the whole clash takes place in the Valley of Megiddo, in the Battle of Armageddon. And at the, you know, the, we all know the culmination of that when Jesus Christ comes in and puts his foot down and, you know, just speaks the word, and he's destroyed, you know, just ultimately completely eradicated. What a great time to look forward to. It's interesting sometimes when you read through and study through and contemplate some of these things, and then you're hearing and reading through information over the last handful of years or so, and you start to hear people talk about cell groups and the Islamic world, that, you know, and some of the things that some of these more radical cell groups are interested in doing. And it's interesting when you're reviewing material that's a little bit dated, and then you hear of these things, and now what we've seen come to pass, and the war we're presently engaged in. It's interesting because it was predicted by several. Because at the time that the World Trade Center was first bombed, the Israelis had quite a vast array of intelligence on this particular topic. And I remember a number of years ago at one of the pastors' conferences, one of the speakers was an Israeli officer, an intelligence expert. And one of the things that he talked about was, we don't need to fear this group, we don't need to fear this group, we don't need to fear this group. It was very fascinating. It just stuck in my mind. I just remember saying these things. He said, man, the real battle is going to be with the nation Islam. That's really what it's going to boil down to, because there is an agenda. You know, by and large, I'm sure a mass of these people aspire to be peaceable and all that. But within its order, or so to speak, or within the organization as a whole, are these cells and these fraction groups, Al-Qaeda being one of them now, as we know. But some of this was spoken of long before we'd ever heard the name Al-Qaeda or any of these things, because of their intelligence and their research on it. And because, see, they've been dealing with terrorist issues for years and years and years and years, you know? This is kind of more or less somewhat new to us as a nation. Not new intelligence-wise, I'm sure, but new as far as its impact on our society or what would really happen. You see, they really want to put away or do away with Western idea and the whole... They see us as devilish or the enemy in that sense. Now, I know a lot of us have friends and people we know that are maybe a part of, Islamic faith. I understand that. And I understand that, you know, some of those people are wonderful people and all that. I'm not trying to lump everything all together or anything, or saying that everyone that is of that persuasion is militant. You know, I'm not suggesting that. But within the confines of this, there is an extremely militant, aggressive, obviously, group. And it was so interesting to go back through information and to see this surfacing then, years ago, a number of years ago. And then it started stirring my memory to think of when I listened to that one guy talking about it, and it's coming to pass like these guys were talking about. I personally wouldn't, you know, it's not that I didn't see it or didn't agree with it or something. It was hard to see how it would play out as it is playing out today. It was hard for me to quite grasp that anyway. But now we see it because as it's affected our Western culture here, and it's going to really affect us continually in the future. I mean, notice what happens with our markets over the last few weeks when all of a sudden we have this heightened alert and we got this potential war looming and, you know, the markets are all skittish and, you know. And the kind of wave that kind of circles through our society because of the concerns of, you know, we jokingly, I've joked about it a little bit, but, you know, just the whole Visqueen and duct tape stuff, you know. And what do we do? What room are we going to use? And, you know, I mean, just it's just conversations we'd think we'd never have, isn't it? You know, the things that we'd think about that we wouldn't think that we would be thinking about. But they're wanting to come against, rally together, and come against Western nations. You know, I think we're coming into a time where, as we travel, discussing, you know, where we may not be quite the sending nation that we once were, including in missions. This is a great concern, you know. The risk level is going to escalate, you know, greatly, you know. And the challenge is going to become, in these last days, pretty intense, I would think. Jesus, one day, at the end and the conclusion of it all, and as we go through chapter 12 next week, we'll find that we'll rule and reign, and the Lord's goodness will prevail. And, you know, I just long to see that day. I think between here and there, it's going to be an interesting road. You know, the times in which we live. I wonder how this will affect Christian freedoms. We start to constrain certain religious ideas and stuff. We're going to start choking out some things. And as our society starts to do, I wonder how that's going to affect Christianity. You know, we're viewed as fundamental believers. We're viewed in a certain light. And it's not always a real popular, certainly politically not a very popular light oftentimes. And I think it's going to be interesting to see as the times go for us. God knew from the very beginning what was going to happen and how it was going to go. And it's interesting when we read through the course of history as it's laid out for us. Even though I know in our studies on our midweek, you know, it's more of an overview time still. But if you go back and study through the accuracy and the exactness of these rulers and their time frames and who married who and how it happened, it's fascinating to see that God had an exact plan and that it has gone exactly as he had and put in motion.